is an interview with Harold T. Alston, Sr. The interview takes place in his office at Alston & Associates Realty in Paducah, Kentucky, and the interviewer is Betsy Brinson. Mr. Alston, would you give me your full name, please?
My full name is Harold Thomas Alston, Sr.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to meet with me today. A number of people here in town suggested that I talk to you.
Okay.
And I think when I talked with you on the phone, I explained mm-hmm. that what I want to do is ask you first some questions about you.
Oh, right.
But then also about your perceptions of the whole history of the effort in Paducah to eliminate legal segregation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk anywhere from 1930 to 1975 mm-hmm. eras. Does that sound okay?
That's fine. I'm familiar with those years.
Okay. If we could begin, please, tell me where and when you were born.
I was born in Paducah, Kentucky, mm-hmm. On January the 1st, 1920.
Okay, so that makes you 80?
Correct.
80 years old, okay. And have you lived pretty much of your life here in Paducah?
I have lived most of my life here in Paducah.
Okay.
Except from some time away at school and time away in serving in the armed services.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
During World War II.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you about some of that, but let me go back and start by asking you to tell me a little bit about your early family. Who made up your family in terms of brothers and sisters?
Okay.
And
I come from a large family, a family of my parents, mother and father,
mm-hmm.
My six brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and where do you fall in the range of those?
I'm the oldest male.
Oldest male, okay.
Yes.
And what can you tell me about your grandparents or your great-grandparents? Or?
Very little. My my grandfather on my mother's side died a week before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather and grandmother on my father's side passed before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I knew neither of them.
Okay.
Neither did I know either my grandparents. My mother's mother died when she was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not have the pleasure of knowing my grandparents.
Okay. Did you hear any stories from other family members about, did your grandparents live in Kentucky?
Well, my mother's mother and father lived in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
He was employed at Illinois Central Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
He was a deacon in the church I attend now in Washington Street Missionary mm-hmm. Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
That said, her mother died when she was a very small child.
Mm-hmm.
My father's parents were born in Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
in the state of Tennessee, and I did not know them. They passed before I was mm-hmm. born.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your early education.
Well, I attended a small school. Elementary school,
mm-hmm.
segregated, of course, at that time,
mm-hmm.
Garfield Elementary School.
Garfield?
Yes.
Okay.
And from there, after graduating the sixth grade there,
mm-hmm.
I enrolled in Lincoln mm-hmm. High School.
Mm-hmm.
It was junior high and high school, it was all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1932.
That you enrolled?
And I enrolled, yes.
Okay.
So he'll get that.
Tell me where Garfield School
was
located.
It was located just about a block from my home, mm-hmm. which was 808 North 10th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the school was at Ninth and Harris Street.
Okay. Now, was there also a Lincoln Elementary School?
Right. Lincoln Elementary School was on the south side. That was on the south side, on South 8th, between Ohio and Tennessee Street.
And then Lincoln High School was the only black high school in town at that
time? In the city, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what year did you graduate from Lincoln High School?
1939.
Okay. I want to ask you some things about your school. Mm-hmm. It was all segregated, of course.
Yes.
Do you remember about your teachers, and in particular, I'm trying to find out if you have any recollection of where they did their teachers' training?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Okay. It's not the kind of thing most people would remember.
No, I don't remember that.
Many teachers then were trained at Kentucky State University.
Kentucky State, I think that's perhaps where some of them received a training.
Okay.
At Kentucky State College, it was called,
right,
at that time,
right,
in Frankfort.
Right. And also during that period, the state had a program, because they wouldn't admit black teachers into graduate programs, mm-hmm, they would pay to send them to, during the summer and whatnot, to universities in other states.
Right, yes.
Do you have any recollection that any of your teachers might have done that?
They did, but then some of my teachers did not get to graduate the graduate training until later years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I believe some of them I know did receive the graduate, get the graduate work at Murray State. Murray State.
Murray State?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How far is Murray State from Paducah?
About 40 miles.
Okay. Can you recall for me, please, maybe when you first realized that you were growing up in a segregated society?
Oh, yes. That was early on. I realized that you had to know it if you know, even if you got away from your home, you knew that you were, mm-hmm, in a segregated society. When I came up, you know, you went to the courthouse, they had fountains for colored only, mm-hmm, restrooms for colored only.
Mm-hmm. And what else was like that in town that you remember?
Well, they had, restaurants, you had to go to the back door.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to be served, you had to go to the back door. I did not receive that type of that embarrassment going to the back door, because I just didn't attend those. I didn't, mm-hmm, frequent those places.
Did you ever try to go to a movie?
Yes.
And what
they
was
had
that
a side
like?
Door. We had a Columbian Arcade Theater here in Paducah, and you went in the side door and you went up to the balcony.
Up to the balcony.
Yes.
And what if you wanted to buy some popcorn or candy?
That wasn't available at the time.
Okay.
As I recall.
Okay. So food there wasn't really an issue?
No.
Okay. Remember any movies that you saw there?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I should know.
What about libraries here in Paducah?
Mm-hmm. We had the Carnegie Library, mm-hmm, at 9th and Broadway.
Mm-hmm. And now, was that an all-black library?
No.
It was
white. I mean, all the employees except custodian was white.
Mm-hmm.
But we could use the facilities.
We could use
there.
It. And did, is that pretty much where people in the black community went to take out books?
Yes. That was the only place you had.
Okay. In some communities, there was either a separate black library or that was it. And so in some communities, the schools frequently used their libraries as the local community library.
Yes.
But that didn't happen here.
No.
Okay.
We had a library in our school, but that wasn't, they had books at the library, but we had use of the public library.
Okay. Did you work at all while you were growing up?
Definitely.
What kinds of things did you do?
Pretty much one thing. I, at a very early age, because of a large family, at early age, my father was, it was called laid off from work. He wasn't dismissed, but they had a layoff at Illinois Central Railroad Shops.
Mm-hmm.
And he was laid off in 1933. That was we don't recall, but that was the year of the Great Depression.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he was laid off from work, and so I was just, I started work just before then at age 12, delivering groceries on Saturday and just helping out around the store, grocery store. I was only a half a block from my home, Chris Burger's Grocery.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there, and I just did little odd things. I would hand the butchered meat out of the box. He was a large person, he couldn't bend over, I'd hand the meat out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would deliver groceries on bicycles in close around,
mm-hmm.
and just help generally,
mm-hmm.
with chores there, clean up, sweep the floors.
Okay.
But
okay.
I worked there before school,
mm-hmm.
and at that period I was going to Lincoln School, and I would work there. And Lincoln School was about 2 miles from my home. I would go in the morning, clean up the store. I started working in the summer, of course, but then continued at school open in September.
Mm-hmm.
And I would walk to school.
Mm-hmm. You'd walk 2 miles?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And after school, I'd walk back home.
Mm-hmm.
And go to work. I'd go home and change my clothes and go to work.
Okay.
I worked there until we completed high school.
Long time.
Mm-hmm. Worked, as time progressed, I worked even after school, all day Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and a half a day on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed that money to help support my family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you were in school, Mr. Alston, did any of your teachers teach you what they would have called Negro history?
Oh, yes.
At that point in time?
Definitely.
What do you remember about that?
I remember quite a bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
The insurrectionists, the inventors. We had so many blacks that invented a lot of the tools and equipment that we use today.
Mm-hmm.
I recall Benjamin Banneker,
mm-hmm.
and Phyllis Wheatley, Teresa Bluter. There's so many that instead of Christmas Addicts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so many that we were teaching. She was a very good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She knew her history,
mm-hmm.
and we had to know it. We were taught.
Right.
And it was very beneficial. You know, you have to know that you have people in your race that have accomplished things and have reached goals,
mm-hmm.
For you to even understand that potential is out there for you if you want it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll stop you. So you're talking about your learning about Negro history while you were attending school.
My instructor at Lincoln School, Lincoln High School, was Mrs. Weston, Mrs. Alice Weston.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you graduated in 1939?
Correct.
And then what?
Well, I graduated from high school, and on the year I graduated from high school, I began working for an insurance company as an agent,
mm-hmm.
for Mammoth Life and Accident Insurance Company.
Okay. Big insurance company out of Louisville.
Correct. The office in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
That time it was 606 West Walnut.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked for them, and I left the insurance company to return to school. And it was the years before the agreement. I graduated in 39, and the war began, you know, in December of 41, so there wasn't a lot of time left there. The war began, I knew I wasn't prepared to do the things I thought I needed to do in the service. I had, at the store I worked, one of the sons was an electronic technician, and I learned to like, I loved electronics. So I enrolled at West Kentucky in a program that was designed to train you for, in, for it wasn't an engineering course, it's an electronics course.
This was Western Kentucky.
West Kentucky Vocational School.
Vocational School, which was an all-black school.
Correct, at that time it was black school. Mm-hmm. And of course we left from there and went to Lexington, to Johnson, and Transylvania, Avon at that time.
Oh,
so we studied
right.
at three schools there. And I think I've got those papers, I'm sure I have. Where I graduated from each state, each level, and I was I served as an electronic technician in the service in the United States and in Germany. In Italy.
Mm-hmm. In Italy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In fact, I was in school in Lexington, Kentucky, when I was called. The draft board called me. I'm married at this time, and the draft board sent me. I could better, of course, to report, you know, for duty. And I read to that and I thought, I wanted to finish my schooling. So on a weekend, I returned to Paducah and I visited my draft board and I told them that I had joined the reserve in Lexington. They had no word of that, but they said if in fact I had joined the reserve, I would be exempt at that time until I finished my schooling. And so I went back to Lexington, and I was able to and remained there until I finished my courses. And I returned, and I was paid my way then I was reimbursed by the family to Glamis, Ohio, where I was inducted into service, Glamis, Ohio. Left there and went to Tuskegee, Alabama, and I was attached to the 332nd Fighter Group. But I was studying radar. It went right in, and I was studying radar. It was where one of the really highly rated companies, and you had to maintain a grade average, I believe, at that time of 85, because it was all black. We had all the black recruits that had electronic training that passed the test, was given an opportunity in that group. So if you made less than 85, you know, you were out of it. You stayed in school, but you were at a lower level. You wasn't studying radar maintenance where I was and I was. But that time it was very highly secretive. And it was just a challenge, you know, to study him. And we would lecture to daily and all day, and at the end of the day you had a test. You couldn't take notes if that's secret. You had to retain the information. Quite a challenge.
Yeah, that's pretty hard.
I like it.
So
mm-hmm.
when you finished the program, were you sent to Europe at that point?
Well, no. That company was deactivated. And we went into another program. I was sent I left Tuskegee and went to Selfridgefield, Michigan.
To where?
Selfridgefield, Michigan. You know, that's right out of Mount Clemens. It's just south of Mount Clemens. Selfridgefield, Michigan's air base. Which I stayed there for several months, and as a technician, I left out of the company I was in and went to the 1000 Sigma. As with the, and from there to the 15th Air Force, I shipped out overseas with the 15th Air Force. I decided I had some friends that were pilots there. I decided I wanted to be a pilot. I sent back home for some material. We had to get some references. Mm-hmm. And so I sent back to people for references. And the day I laid my papers on the first sergeant's desk, that morning at rally, they had froze all the applications because we were going to ship out overseas. So I didn't get to go to pilot school. When I returned from the service, I went to Barclay Airfield. I studied there, flying out at the airport here. I did not get to complete it by this time I got family. Mm-hmm. I was district manager of Mammoth Insurance here. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't, I'd find myself at time to open my office. I'd be up over Brookport, over Metropolis, someplace over in Illinois. And of course, I couldn't do that and support my family, you know, to leave. I had to quit. So I didn't get my license.
So I wonder if being involved in the training and all and seeing some new places during the war, if that shaped your understanding in any way of what an integrated society might be like.
It did. It really did. One of the things here, we didn't have much of an incentive to do anything. I recall that my next door neighbor, his mother worked hard in washing, took in washing and ironing. That was quite common that day. I sent her son to college. And as a matter of fact, two young men in my neighborhood who went to Kentucky State. Mm-hmm. And they returned home and they couldn't get anything to do. And so they worked out in service, and they were earning the same money I was earning. I was in high school. They were older than I. Of course, I'm in high school and working part-time. I was earning as much money as they were working, because they were working out as chauffeurs, house boys, mm-hmm. type thing. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't get, they just couldn't get a job in the profession that they had chosen.
Mm-hmm. So when you came back, you were working for the insurance company, mm-hmm. and you were raising your family. Mm-hmm. What was happening, if anything, in the community? We stopped for a moment, but I was asking you if having been away with the military, mm-hmm. had helped to shape your thinking about race relations back home in Paducah in any way.
It did. Uh-huh. One of the things that I think is important to note, as I said, that in Paducah, in that street, I related the incident about my neighbor, mm-hmm. that had been to school, which seemed like a waste of time when he couldn't get anything to do when he got back. Mm-hmm. And I recall after leaving, was inducted at Fort Hays, came back to Tuskegee, Alabama, and leaving there and going to Michigan, and talking with the soldiers, with my officers, I knew several of them, and I found one of the things that was interesting that in places north of Paducah, out of Cincinnati, and they didn't have as much segregation there, mm-hmm. as they had here locally. And those people just doing great things, you know, that that's just unheard of, mm-hmm. locally. Mm-hmm. Which gave you an incentive to go ahead and do something. It suggested that you could be something, you right. could do what you wanted to do, you just right. had to work for it.
But I also wonder, I've heard, tell me if this is correct, that Western Kentucky Vocational School attracted students from around the country.
That is true.
That it had a national reputation, mm-hmm. at the time. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if any of the students who came here from other places looked about and said, you know, this is different here than, mm-hmm. elsewhere, and it ought to be better, or whether there was any of that influence operating here.
Even though there were some areas that were where it wasn't as segregated, segregation was pretty well a universal thing, no matter where they came from. Mm-hmm. in the service, I had an opportunity. I was in business places like Detroit, Michigan, Saginaw, Michigan. I was in Michigan, all over Michigan, because my base station was there, and I stayed there for several months. And they were suffering the same indignities that we were here. It just wasn't, but there were so many, now these were isolated cases where people were given opportunities and took advantage of opportunities and were able to advance and achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. But just generally speaking, it was all over. It was in New York, we had soldiers from all over, and we all suffered the same indignities. We were segregated against. Our opportunities were limited. Mm-hmm. The difference is that we saw from those few that were able to break out of that mold, mm-hmm. that there was a possibility that you could come out of it. Mm-hmm. Here it just seemed like a hopeless situation that, you know, before leaving the area, mm-hmm. it seemed like here it was just a hopeless situation. You were just, you know, you were just going to be suppressed and, mm-hmm. and segregated against all your life. Mm-hmm. So to leave this area and go where people were, in from other areas, you could see that they could be, you know, that they could make a difference.
Right. Well, I know there was an NAACP chapter here, but I don't know how far back it.
It was it was dated way back when I was a youngster. I belonged to NAACP. I'm a life member in NAACP now, mm-hmm. and I encouraged and worked with NAACP for a number of years. Mm-hmm.
And so when you came back from the service, mm-hmm. What was happening with the NAACP at that point in time?
NAACP was very active. Mm-hmm. We had a very active president of NAACP and a person of Curly Brown. Mm-hmm. You know, you've heard of him.
Uh-huh.
And he was very active and very daring. He, a lot of things were accomplished. Mm-hmm. Made a lot of advancements. During his tenure here as president, he was president a long time in NAACP.
Okay. And you said you were a member. Were you ever an officer of the NAACP?
An officer? No, I was not an officer in NAACP.
Okay. Tell me, at what point did you move into real estate?
I moved into real estate. And my son asked me, said, "So, Dad, why do you want to go back to school? You're doing all right." I was working at the post office. I left insurance work to go to work at a plant here. They were building Martin Marietta as a carpenter. I knew nothing about carpentry, but I was at that period. I was pretty apt. I could learn, mm-hmm. and I bought overalls and bought some lumber, bought some books, and and I kind of started off training myself. Then I went to school at Western Kentucky Vocational School again, mm-hmm. for carpentry, you know. So I got a job there. I wanted a job there, I know you know about the problems they're having now with radiation, mm-hmm. with the waste material that's causing problems. When they first opened, before Carbat, it was the first, the first group that had the plant. During the time they were looking for employees, we were just getting back out of service. And I and three other electronic technicians went down to get a job, to apply for a job. Well, I was sitting there, had a glass front you could see inside. After I had gone in for an interview and filled my application, one of my friends went in to sign. And I noticed something peculiar. I noticed that on black applicants, they put a C right in the corner. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not easy to distinguish what a person, when they do that, to go up in the corner of your application and do that. Mm-hmm. I knew what they were doing. I went in and requested, after he came out, I told my friend what they were doing. I went in, waited, and went in and asked to speak to the person who interviewed me. I asked him, "May I see my application?" He said, "No." So they couldn't show it to you again. It's, you know, that was their property now. They couldn't take it out. "What do you want?" Got the correction. I said, "No." I said, "I observed you putting a C in the corner of my application. I'd like to see it." No, we didn't do that. I said, "May I just see it? I don't want it in my hand. You just hold it. I just want to see it." "No, we can't. No, but once we put it in the file, we can't take it out." And that's something else I carried in LAACP. But the fact is that when any of us hired, they were looking for people with electronic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We had served our country as electronic technicians, mm-hmm. and we were denied employment because of our race. Mm-hmm. That's just an incident that I'm probably better off after what happened, but nevertheless, I felt terrible at that time.
And at that point, you didn't really have a remedy like the law.
No.
Or a Human Relations Commission.
No.
You had the NAACP.
You had the NAACP, but they were limited as what they could do as accomplish. You know, when I went out to, I had a lot of training. I was around. I had a business as a television, radio repair person after coming back from service one time. And so I was, I wasn't just in school. I was learning, but I could not. I said I wasn't. I didn't have a lot of knowledge of carpenter, but I was an electronic technician. They would not hire me. Electrician is basic to the course I was taking, mm-hmm. but they wouldn't even give me any consideration to go into the electrician union to go to work out there as an electrician. Mm-hmm. They just told all kind of lies, you know, that the business agent was never in, nobody I could talk to, and so I was just denied an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you worked for the United States Post Office?
Yes.
And was employment an issue there because of color?
Oh yes, every place. I went to work there as a postmaster. It was named Lewin Miller. Mm-hmm. And now remember, now I'm in insurance at that time. And I was out there pretty good, you know. I was earning average, a little better than average income. But I had to travel a lot. Because I was traveling, my brother-in-law had applied for a job and got a job at the post office, took a test and got a job. And he was encouraging me to come on down and get a job since I wanted to quit traveling so much. I had a family, I'd been in service, I'd been left service. I went to Ohio to get a job out at Wright-Patterson Air Base, and I was qualified for a job then. I just had to wait until my turn. So he said, why don't you just get a job at the post office? You got to get a job at the post office here. I said, oh, well, I may go down and talk to him. So I left, but this time I've advanced to district manager of the insurance company. So at that day, even when I first went into real estate, you wore a shirt and tie every day, you know. Of course, everything's more casual now. But I always felt comfortable with a shirt and tie because I'd worn it so much. But so when I went down to talk to the postmaster about the job, I had on suit, shirt and tie, and this didn't sit too well with him. He'd been accustomed to hiring people that minorities, I guess looked more like they were working people. Mm-hmm. And he just told me, I don't think you want a job down here. I said, sure I do. And he looked at my application. I filled an application and said, well, we don't pay as much money as you do. I said, I think so. I said, there's other considerations. I said, I have to do a lot of traveling, and I want to stay at home. I think I'd like it down here. But hey, I think the PLB all right. And he just discouraged me from taking a test. Mm-hmm. I took the test. I applied for the test. I took the test. And I passed the test. But I couldn't get hired. And so now I'm working at the plant. I got a job now. I left insurance and went to work mm-hmm. as a carpenter. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't get in. I could get in the carpenter local. I couldn't get an electrician local. And so we got rained out one day. I had on boots and muddy overalls, muddy. And I drove all the way into his office, showed to knock on the door and let me in. And he looked at me one time and said, well, he said, you know, I said, we may have something for you. Mm-hmm. But we don't have, he said, we don't have a clerk carriage test. But now, we don't have any openings correct here. But we do have an opening for mail handler. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to take a mail handler position, we'll let you have that. And then when the clerk chair job come open, you have that. Now, I remember I passed clerk chair test. So I said, yeah, I'll take that. But sure enough, she was a word. She gave us temporary employment. I knew that. But it started in about the 15th of December. Well, I had to leave my job that I had. I was working on the carpenter. I was making much more money, but I knew that was temporary. That wasn't going to last, and I needed something more stable. So I went to work there as a mail handler. And the man just lied to me, you know. He said, well, he'd see me and said, well, we're going to get opening pretty soon. And he didn't know that, you know, young men talk. Mm-hmm. The white fellas that I worked with, they had taken the test. They failed it. But they were hired anyway as a clerk carrier, and I passed the test, and I couldn't get a job as a clerk carrier. Mm-hmm. And they you know, they're just talking about it. I didn't tell them what had happened to me. Mm-hmm. We just talked. Mm-hmm. But I knew what had happened. So the postmaster, he was white, very fine person though. He's just a good guy, you know, and fair person, mighty person. And we were talking, I told him what had happened to me. And I told him what I was going to do about it. I was going to for an employment officer in Cincinnati. And I asked him if he knew him, because he had been an inspector, been demoted. So he said, oh, you mean I'd have to do that. I knew he was a friend of the postmaster. Mm-hmm. So the next day, after I told him about me going up there, the next day, the postmaster came out and said, we got an opening. Mm-hmm. But he said, I wouldn't buy it. I said, you don't want to take it, though. He said, you get all the time you want now, but if you take that position as a carrier, then I didn't want to be a carrier because I'd never worked outside. I wanted to be inside. And that was, they didn't have a clerk. It was the same test for the clerk carrier. It was called clerk carrier test. He said, so we can hire you as a clerk or carrier. We don't have any clerk jobs open, but carriers are. Look, the weather's very nasty here. You'll be working out in all kinds of weather. In here, you're in here where it's nice and dry. He just discouraged me altogether. He said, and I know you got a family. And right now, you know, you're getting 40 hours a week, but you may be getting 20 hours or 22 hours a week. Don't know if you'll end up taking care of your family. Mm-hmm. But you think about it. If you want it, you know, we can give it to you. So I talked to my supervisor, a person I had known, because this person happened to have traded at the grocery store I worked at when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I knew him. I said, well, until he told me, I said, I don't pay no attention to him. I said, you go ahead and take the job. I said, then you get plenty of time. He also told me he didn't know when I would make regular because there's so many people ahead of me. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew that was false because we had talked. I knew I had the highest grade. That's why I knew I was up, I'd be up next, but he lied about that. Nevertheless, to make it brief, I told him I would accept it. I accepted the job as a carrier. Mm-hmm. And
were you the first black carrier hired in Paducah?
I was the first regular black carrier, okay. Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was the first black carrier on a regular status. There had been somebody that had carried some mail one time or two times, but I was the first black carrier.
And how long did you work for the post office?
I worked for the post office for 27 years.
27 years. Okay.
I retired with my Army time, 3 years in service, mm-hmm. and 27 years post office. Okay. I retired in 1979.
Okay. 1979, okay. And at that point, did you come into realty?
No, I was in real estate.
You were in real estate?
I was discouraged. I had to take another test at the post office. Yeah, I didn't carry all the time. I loved taking tests, and so I had taken a test, and I was a civil service examiner.
Uh-huh.
And I had the job as an examiner. What I was doing was giving tests, all kinds of tests, civil service tests. And that job, I held that job about 3 years, and the job was abolished. Mm-hmm. And so I had to revert back to a carrier.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time that I got the job, and that was another, I tell you, I've had so many problems with this, you wouldn't believe it. At the time, I took the test for the examiner, civil service examiner, and they gave it to a white person, of course, and it had a less score than I had. Mm-hmm. And I wrote to the Fair Employment Office in Cincinnati, I really didn't want to pursue it because I don't like disappointments. I said, I'm just going to prepare to leave. And that's when I started to taking tests and returned to school, went to Duke Community College. Mm-hmm. And I went to Drawings Business College first. Drawings Business College.
Okay.
To take a course in real estate. Later I went to PCC, but at that time it was Drawings. Mm-hmm. I was going to leave, but I got a family. I can't just walk away. You know, I got mm-hmm. to have something to do. But during this period of time, the guy that the Fair Employment Officer came down, but he wasn't very helpful, and he was black. Mm-hmm. But after he talked to the postmaster, he left without even talking to me anymore. Mm-hmm. I've had that happen on two occasions.
I'm interested to know, because you were a federal employee and mm-hmm. there was the Hatch Act mm-hmm. in those days mm-hmm. that said we don't want our employees involved in partisan politics.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Or other controversial
yes.
kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did that affect your involvement in the community here? Or did it?
In what sense?
Well, did it keep you out of activities like political parties, or were you, keep you out of the NAACP?
No. As a matter of fact, I didn't talk about it a lot. I had been, you know, when you grew up in the atmosphere I had come up in, you segregated against so much, you got to just fight. You got to fight your way all the way mm-hmm. until it just another fight, you know. Mm-hmm. And I decided to abandon it. I didn't pursue it anymore. Mm-hmm. After he went back and said mm-hmm. that, and I had another incident years later that's similar to that, where I took a test. I took a test and this is another type of exam. This was to examine the books. I was pretty good in mathematics, and so had a lot of experience. As I said, I had been manager of an insurance company, and then knew how to use all types of office equipment. Mm-hmm. And I had submitted a resume for another type of examiner. This was examined to go and examine the books in the post office, as opposed to giving tests, what the first one was all about. And about three persons out of our office that took the tests. And because he was kind of afraid of it, but I passed the test, and I was mm-hmm. fortunate enough to make a pretty good grade. Mm-hmm. But I thought I was going to get the job, but they gave it to another guy, to my mm-hmm. friend. We haven't been a relative to the postmaster.
Let me ask you a question or mm-hmm. two about Paducah, and what was going on here in the early 60s
during the time of schooling?
Well, the a little later than that, with public accommodations, mm-hmm. like opening up the restaurants and mm-hmm. theaters and whatnot.
Housing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell me a little bit about the housing, because you're a realtor, so
yes.
you know that area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was there, of course, in Louisville, and at the state level, 67, 68, there was a whole open housing movement.
Mm-hmm.
What was happening in Paducah along those lines?
In Paducah, we didn't have a big problem with in selling houses in any area. Mm-hmm. Paducah, if you've been here, you know, we're pretty much scattered over. We had minorities on the south side, north side, west side, all over, but in few numbers, mm-hmm. you know. But it's just been like that. Majority I did live, I'll say, across the tracks, but we hadn't scattered around. So it hasn't, I only had one incident That was many years ago. I sold a house at to a young couple. And as they were moving in, it was on Estes Lane, guys came by in a truck and they, of course, began to call them names, you know. Mm-hmm. And said, "You better get away. We're gonna be back tonight." But it so happened that this young lady had a cousin that was a deer hunter. He had all kind of rifles. So she called him, and he came up and parked his vehicle near the front yard. Mm-hmm. Got a couple of his rifles out, put them on his shoulder, walked in the house, and he left that truck in. He stayed there. He had no more trouble with nobody bothering him. But they was just somebody trying to intimidate them, you know. Okay. But we didn't have any, I never had any serious problems.
Okay.
I'd shown houses all over this town, and then it's back far back as the 70s. Mm-hmm. And they would be curious. I'd go and I'd care a minority couple in a all-white neighborhood, and kids, I'd see them go in the house, and I'd see curtains go back, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'd come to the door and peep out the door, but no incidents.
Mm-hmm. I had the experience recently in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I asked the realtor about how multicultural the neighborhood was, because I was interested in a multicultural neighborhood, and she said to me that she couldn't tell me that by law. And I certainly appreciate the history of why that was true.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But now you can't find that out from your realtor.
That's
you
right.
You can ask almost anything else.
Yes. But they were not permitted to divulge that information.
Right.
Back to that, one thing that did happen, my son, who's also a realtor that's not here right now, he's belongs to the union and they're trying to negotiate something with the city. You've been reading something about it in the paper, I'm sure it was in the morning paper. Finally began to get the mayor to agree to some compromise. But
I don't know that I did, actually.
Sure.
Tell me what that's about.
Oh, goodness. I don't know where I picked that paper up. Yeah. I must get it.
Well, just tell me, he's with the union.
Yeah, he worked here, but he's also a fireman.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they just, and the city just refused to negotiate. They told him, no, they wasn't going to do nothing. They wouldn't even talk about another contract. They just worked, you know, they just continued working. But he wasn't going to try to negotiate a contract. They would do it their way or no way at all, something to that effect. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's where he is today.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you were about to tell me an example. You're talking about open housing.
Oh, yeah. That son was living out there. Before he married, he was living out in the area he lives now, in the Heath Concord area, in a duplex. But he was getting married. And he got his wife's picture here. I'd like to show it to you. See it here. She's in picture. She's at the bank.
How old is your son?
He's 51.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Nevertheless, he was trying to rent an apartment. He was getting married. He wanted to rent an apartment because it was kind of a bachelor apartment he had. He needed something for his wife. And he was turned down for several apartments. He looked at the paper, and the paper said, that the apartment was available. He'd call them, and the apartment was available. When he'd go, they see he was black. It'd just been rent. So he was just...
That was recently?
No, that was 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I said, Ron, we just got to do something about this. I said, I'd get a friend of mine to go and see if he can rent an apartment. I was at the post office, but I had some friends there that were real friends. Mm-hmm. So I asked one of the guys, I told him what my problem was. I said, well, you see if you can rent that apartment. I said, if you do, you probably have to go to court. He said, oh, it's okay. Mm-hmm. So he did. He went, tracked him into the apartment. They called him, they showed him the apartment. Mm-hmm. But then we carried it to to Frankfurt.
To Frankfurt?
To civil rights, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. To the Civil Rights Commission mm-hmm. in Frankfurt. And they sent a lawyer, God's name, I think it was Aubrey. Mm-hmm. You remember an attorney that?
It was a Philip Ardery, A-R-D-E-R-Y.
No, Aubrey.
No, I don't.
First name. Anyway, it was an attorney, and it's been I said, at least 20 years ago. Okay. Anyway, they came down, and we won the case. Mm-hmm. It wasn't one, it was two different places where that we sued. Mm-hmm. And we won it. But wasn't anything. I think it was minimal, the amount of money. But the idea was the next open, they were to notify him, mm-hmm. and which they didn't do.
Let me ask you, because you now, and you've had the Human Relations Commission for a while mm-hmm. here
yes.
in Paducah. How effective have they been in handling discrimination complaints?
Yeah, as you probably know, the lady that was here, she was on that committee's mm-hmm. commission here.
Shirley Cooper was on the, I know she was on the state commission on
Cooper.
Human rights.
Yeah, she was on the city commission
the local
prior to
commission?
Going. Prior to going to the state, uh-huh,
uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they've been they're doing a good job, a commendable job.
Mm-hmm. So that's been a resource for the community.
Yes,
okay.
It is. Uh-huh. But
how do you know Shirley Cooper?
How do I know her?
Uh-huh.
I've known her for years and years. She goes to my church.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She used to go to my church. She sang in the choir there. Uh-huh. And she taught. She taught out at. She retired from mm-hmm. teaching just out at McNabb School.
Okay.
She and my wife. My wife is deceased. She and my wife are good friends.
Okay. I'm coming to the end, but I have one more question, and that is, how far do you think the Black community has come in Paducah in terms of achieving racial equality at this point in time, in the year 2000?
I would say that we've come a long ways. We've come a long way, but we've got a long ways to go. Mm-hmm. But we have come, I can sincerely say that we've come a long ways, even in this profession.
Mm-hmm. In
when
real
I was
estate.
Going to school, when I was going to school to take, to study real estate, the Paducah Board of Realtors changed the laws. Said that you had to come in, you cannot be an affiliate with the Paducah Board of Realtors mm-hmm. on a part-time basis. And mm-hmm. they knew full well I was working at the post office and it was coming close to my retirement period. I wasn't about, and he knew I had a family at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't about to, you know, I couldn't leave that income into real estate mm-hmm. full time. So they changed the law to keep me out. I couldn't get no one would. I had to be sponsored by a broker.
Mm-hmm.
No one could sponsor me because I was going to be part time.
And so, you didn't have any remedy at that point.
Oh yeah, I found a remedy.
How did you do that?
Did you know Fred Morgan?
Fred
Morgan, Representative Fred Morgan.
No.
He was in the legislature in Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had an insurance agency here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known him for a number of years. And I was by there. I had tried to exhaust all my possibilities of getting in with someone. And I saw Fred one day and I told him, Fred, how about we hang? How about you sponsor me as a realtor? Just like to hang my license in your office. He said, you know, I'm not active. He said, my God, I keep my license, but I'm not active. He said, I sponsor you, but I'm not here. I said, if you sell something, you get to do it all yourself. And at that time, you couldn't close out yourself. You had to have your broker close it. I said, I don't have many alternatives. I said, we just have to wait until you come home to do any closing, force them to sell something.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay. He said, so I'll sponsor you. So I did. And so he did. Sponsors. That's how I got in.
But he sponsored you, and you were part time.
Yes, but he wasn't part. He was. He was one of the few people that had a license, but not a member of the board.
Okay.
See, he was inactive.
So.
And his license was current.
But weren't you still in violation of the?
Beg pardon?
Weren't you still in violation of the full-time law at that point?
No, no, because I didn't belong to the board. Now, they can't keep you from being a real, they can't stop you from being a real, as selling real estate. But they can stop you from selling properties on, in multiple listing. They don't have to let you show their properties. But they can't keep me from listing and selling my properties.
Right, okay, okay.
So we were not in violation.
Okay. Mr. Austin, is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you think is important to this topic to share?
You know, there's just no end. Remember, I'm an old man and I've had so many experiences. And, one of the things that get me through all my problems, I've been a Christian since I was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just care to the Lord.
Thank you very much. That's a good